The university used to be such a staid, boring old place. Seems like an eternity ago now. Hello, Anthony Fennell here. This is Future Tense. In the last couple of decades, tertiary institutions have been pushed, poked, prodded, and jabbed into change. The courses they teach, their relationship with industry, the fees they charge, the way they market themselves, all changed. And then, just a few short years ago, came MOOCs, massive open online courses.
Every few seconds, the ticker on the Coursera website moves up as 70,000 new students a week enroll in courses like Human-Computer Interaction, Introduction to Astronomy, and Modern Poetry, all offered by top-tier universities.
I've been teaching a class similar to this at Duke for 10 years, and I'm excited about the opportunity to offer it to many more students through this online venue.
Welcome to the brave new world of massive open online courses, known as MOOCs, a tool for democratizing higher education.
Led by top-ranking universities like Harvard and MIT, MOOCs were the buzz of the tertiary sector just over a year ago, when we first covered their emergence on this show. You can still find the audio on our website. At that time, MOOCs courses were said to be revolutionising education, and the universities of the future, it was said, would soon be doing away with much of their bricks and mortar infrastructure in favour of online MOOCs courses, which could be made available to hundreds of thousands of students at any one time, anywhere in the world. That was a year ago. Today on the programme, we look at how that vision for the future of education is shaping up. We'll hear from the head of one of the biggest MOOCs providers, a company called edX. We'll hear from the Pro Vice Chancellor of Education at Oxford about why her university will not be going down the MOOCs path. And we'll also be joined by this person.
Hi, my name is Selena Larson and I'm a journalist in San Francisco. I've never failed a university class before, so I decided to undertake a MOOC, or a massive open online course, on terrorism and counterterrorism, comparing theory and practice. How did it go? Was I as successful as I was in college? Later in the program, you'll find out how it went.
Indeed, we will. But let's go first to Anant Agarwal, the president of edX, the non-profit MOOCs platform founded by MIT and Harvard. MOOCs, he concedes, are still a work in progress, but he says they have kicked some significant goals.
I think MOOCs have exceeded all our expectations, certainly at edX, in terms of where they are today and what our vision for MOOCs was when we started out edX. And in some respects, I think our goals and aspirations were a bit different from some of the other MOOC providers. So therefore, in some sense, for us, it's been pretty consistent with what we've been thinking about. So for example, when we launched edX about 2.5 years ago, we wanted to increase access to learning for students all over the world. And we said we wanted to educate 1 billion people around the world. A second part of the mission was we wanted to improve campus education and impact how learning was done on campuses through the blended model. So today, 2.5 years later, we have over 2.3 million learners on edX from 196 countries. We have 180 courses in all subjects, ranging from humanities to engineering to medicine to music to law and business and so on. We have about 45 institutional partners, including some of the best universities in the world, like Queensland University and Australia National University, Tsinghua, MIT, Harvard, Berkeley, UT Austin, and the list goes on and on. And we've been delighted with the extent to which learners have been able to use the material, use the certificates that they get from edX, you know, find better jobs, apply to colleges, get admissions. So that's been very, very heartening. In terms of the second part of our goal, which was improving campus education, there it's been truly mind-boggling, the extent to which things have been used. At MIT, just as one example, one of our partner institutions, two out of three students are using the edX platform on campus in one way or another. And if you'd asked me 2 years ago that two out of three MIT students would be using edX in their campus courses, I would have said absolutely no way. You know, maybe one out of 20 students perhaps, but certainly not two out of three. And many of our university partners are using courses on campus. And we're also seeing results where the improvement in quality of education and the outcomes certainly has, even in the short period of time, has surprised us.
Anant Agarwal from edX, and we'll come back to him shortly. as he points out, the take-up rate for MOOCs courses in countries like the US, Australia and the UK has been impressive. And more universities continue to explore the potential of MOOCs as a teaching platform. But the critics argue that enrolments are only part of the story. Gail Christensen is the Executive Director for Global Initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania, and her team's research into the reach of massive open online courses suggests that much of the rhetoric around bringing education to the global masses, around promoting greater education access and equality, hasn't yet matched the reality on the ground.
So this study looked at 32 massive open online courses that were offered by the University of Pennsylvania. And the University of Pennsylvania had sort of the largest breadth of course offerings. And so we thought that would be a good way to start to see who was taking these courses. And we were able to survey all of the people that had enrolled in a University of Pennsylvania massive open online course, which turned out to be over 400,000 people. And then we got the survey results and then were able to start to see where people were from and who they were that were taking these courses. And what we found is that about a third of the people participating in the courses were from the United States. The other third were from other OECD countries or developed countries, and the other third were from the rest of the world.
So the participants were really skewed quite heavily towards developed countries, not towards developing countries.
Yes, that is the case.
Now, you also found that 83% of the people who undertook a MOOCs course were actually already highly educated, that they had a degree or a diploma. How do we explain that?
Well, what we know is that new technologies tend to attract those who are highly educated and have access to resources. And so that's exactly what we saw in the results here. So even in countries where less than 10% of the population has a college degree, you're still seeing the majority of people who are taking these courses are college educated, close to 80%, even in developing countries as well. The other finding is that this is heavily skewed male, and that's also typical of new technologies, that men tend to take up new technologies first. And what's interesting is that it's actually equal numbers in the United States and then a little bit skewed in other developed countries, but very skewed in the developing countries, whether it be the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, or other developing countries.
So they're heavily skewed towards males, and they're also heavily skewed towards people who already have an education. But you believe, don't you, that they can be important in terms of that ideal of spreading access eventually. What needs to change, though?
Well, I think there are three key things that we need to focus on. I think the first thing is that we need to bridge the digital divide. Individuals need access to a computer and to the internet, and possibly even, as we know, that there are sort of leapfrogging effects to mobile platforms, a mobile way to access this kind of technology. The second thing is that the courses themselves have largely been at a university level, so there's a need for strong basic and secondary education, and this sort of harkens back to movements like the Education for All, that all individuals should have basic levels of education, and those are needed in order to take advantage of these courses. And I think a final thing is that, you know, in order to make this work, is that there's sort of a need for partnerships, whether those be international or with other local entities, to provide some scaffolding and support so that people can complete these courses or develop study groups in order to make it through the content in their local environment.
Gail Christensen, the Executive Director for Global Initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania. So access and equality are still issues to be addressed. But there's also been some troubling research findings of late around student participation and retention rates. Late last year, in one study, US researchers from Boston University, MIT and Microsoft examined the behaviour of over 100,000 MOOC students looking specifically at their levels of engagement. What they found was that the online participation of students taking MOOCs courses fell dramatically almost from day one. Almost half of registered students, they discovered, never post more than twice to a MOOCs online discussion forum. Dave White is a highly respected researcher into technology-assisted lifelong learning. He's based in the UK. What does he make of the MOOCs phenomenon?
So I think a year ago we were seeing these massive numbers of people signing up for MOOCs, which was in some sense very encouraging. But I wonder whether people were attracted to the notion of the brand of these very powerful, very long-lived institutions rather than necessarily the format itself. Here's the thing about MOOCs that I've found intriguing, just watching them emerge and the space evolve. The original idea of MOOC was this connectivist idea where people would get together and talk. They'd use the internet to have these times where they were co-present, where they were discussing, where they were pushing forward ideas, not necessarily going through a fixed curriculum, but kind of creating the course as they went. This was a connectivist MOOC. Now, the MOOCs that we've seen emerging that have got these massive numbers that work at scale, I think what's intriguing to me about them, having worked in online distance learning for over a decade, is that they were hailed as radical. And in some senses, the fact that they're free and open access is radical. But from a pedagogical point of view, they are very old-fashioned generally, because they involve, you know, starting on module one, reading some content, watching a video of a lecture, having a think about it, maybe talking to fellow students, and then doing a quiz or some kind of fairly automated assessment. Now, that is not radical pedagogy. If anything, in the world of online learning, that's a step backwards. What they are is potentially radical business models. And I think that a lot of people that were promoting them a year ago were actually, if you look closely, business people, not necessarily directly educators. You know, if you lift the lid and you really take these apart, they're not necessarily a radical form of education. It's a radical form of distribution, it's potentially a radical form of business. But at heart, the pedagogy of a MOOC is actually, you know, 50 years old.
From your experience, are institutions now reevaluating their enthusiasm for MOOCs? Are you seeing signs of that, particularly with the medium-level universities, tertiary institutions?
I think that it's quite a tough environment at the moment in some senses. And the question is, what does the institution think that MOOC's going to do for them? Okay, so one answer to that question is, it doesn't matter, because they're higher education institutions, is part of their responsibility to educate and inform, and this is an excellent way they can do it. Okay, so there are some higher education institutions out there that genuinely look beyond their boundaries. They see the idea of a kind of global fund of knowledge, and that part of the point of their existence is to educate and inform as many people as possible, and a MOOC's a great mechanism to do that at scale. Now, on the other hand, I think there are a lot of institutions that see the MOOC as being a way of raising their visibility. So it's as much about promoting them as an institution as it is about the education inherent in the MOOC itself. Okay, so they're great ways of appearing in the online world and therefore the world itself. So for, you know, as you say, mid-level institutions, they can really punch above their weight. If they create a MOOC that becomes really popular and is really good quality, then they appear in the kind of notional league table of universities. They get a great reputation. So I think they can function from that point of view. I think perhaps the universities that were hoping that somehow they'd turn into revenue of some sort, I don't know exactly where the thinking is there. There's lots of different ways you could potentially turn a MOOC into something that generates income. But the initial investment is pretty huge. You know, it's expensive putting together these courses. They take an awful lot of time and an awful lot of skill. And so you have to wonder whether it does look expensive for an awful lot of people that are involved. And I don't think it's any accident that the first players into the game in a big way were the ones that had pretty deep pockets.
And by deep pockets, once again, we're talking about the likes of MIT, Stanford and Harvard. Now, Oxford University, as we all know, also isn't short of a penny. But as I mentioned earlier, it steadfastly refuses to go down the MOOC's path. Dr. Sally Mapstone is the university's Pro Vice-Chancellor of Education.
The official position on MOOCs from Oxford University is that we're watching the MOOC phenomenon with great interest, but that as yet we haven't felt any strong impulse to participate in it.
The New York Times declared 2012 the year of the MOOC. Now, it's 2 years on from that. Are you saying that it hasn't really lived up to expectations?
No, I think that MOOCs are a developing phenomenon. I think that it's great that there's so much interest in how people teach and how they reach a wide audience. But for a university like Oxford, MOOCs aren't an immediate priority for us. The way we teach in Oxford is at the other end of the spectrum from MOOCs. So much of the education that we deliver is very individual, very personalized for the tutorial system. Two people sitting in a room with a tutor, teaching them on a regular basis for our 8-week terms, getting to know their work and them really well. Now, that's a very long way away from a massive open course distributed across the world to global learners. So the first thing to say about MOOCs is that they are the antithesis of how we teach in Oxford. That said, we can see that MOOCs have potential for, as it were, showcasing particular aspects of a university's working curriculum. And that, I can understand, is attractive to other universities. But again, we don't see that as an immediate priority for us. We would also have, we always have had doubts about, as it were, the whole aspect of certification and accreditation associated with MOOCs, not least because, as a university, we're not constructed to offer credit. So there are various, as it were, sort of practical, operational things about MOOCs which don't really speak to the way in which we deliver education at Oxford. But that's not to say that we don't see that, you know, they're attractive to other universities.
And yet a university like Harvard, which many people would put in the same basket as Oxford, has gone for MOOCs in a big way. Why the difference between an institution like Oxford and an institution like Harvard?
I think there are two possible reasons. Firstly, although Oxford is a very well-established university and a university that's comparatively well off, it doesn't have the massive endowment that Harvard has and hasn't had the resource to put the prodigious investment into MOOCs that Harvard has decided that it wants to do. Again, I think also the notion of online massive courses is possibly something that speaks more to the kind of recruitment activity that Harvard is interested in. In Oxford, we don't see MOOCs as the same kind of recruitment vehicle. So we're interested in the experiment, but again, we don't really see it as speaking immediately to our pedagogical mission. There are all sorts of subjects which it would be very difficult to deliver with the depth and breadth that we associate with an Oxford education in a MOOC. And I think it's actually quite important to address this because there are really, I think, serious and important quality assurance issues in relation to MOOCs. A MOOC should not be seen as a substitute for a university degree course. When you're studying a degree course at university, you have to do a tremendous amount of reading around, hunter-gathering, research, all sorts of different forms of interaction. And the notion that an online course, albeit supported by peer grading, a certain amount of interaction and so forth, could ever substitute for the in-depth experience of going to university for 3 or 4 years and studying directly, immediately with others and with tutors, I think is something that needs to be knocked on the head. MOOCs are a supplement, potentially, to university education. They shouldn't be seen as a substitute for it.
You're on RN, and this is Future Tense with Anthony Fennell.
As a tech journalist here in San Francisco, I cover a lot of topics that are related to technology, but personally, I'm interested in other things such as, you know, politics, economics, history, things like that. So I decided to take a class on terrorism and counterterrorism, comparing theory and practice. I figured both for my own personal interests as well as the ability to put it on my LinkedIn profile that I had been able to pass this Coursera class would look really well. Ultimately, it was for both professional and personal reasons.
Time to go back to our experimental MOOC student, Selina Larson. Remember, she never failed a subject while at university. In fact, she got very high marks. So how did she go with her first ever MOOCs course?
I failed my first MOOC. I am a little embarrassed to say that because I'd never failed a class in my entire life, but it was an experiment that I ultimately failed.
And why did you fail?
So I feel like there were a few reasons for that. Personally, I feel like the online education is really great, but I feel like there was some personal interaction that was really lacking. The professor was fantastic. His lectures were awesome, but we didn't really get to engage with the professor, get feedback from the instructor or the teacher's assistant. Also, there was a little bit of peer grading going on, which I wasn't a fan of in college, and I'm still not a fan of in the online courses. So we were required to write essays throughout the program that were then graded by other students. There was a rubric, and I felt that I had hit all the points on the rubric, and yet when students were grading my papers, they were failing me, and they weren't providing me with any feedback, so I was unable to fix those errors for the next essay.
And that whole idea of peer grading, of having your results decided by five or so anonymous students, for a lot of people, that would be quite confronting. That would be quite difficult to understand why that would be an acceptable process. It was difficult for you, as you say, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And the thing is, in person, in normal college courses that you take, and the professors there at the front of the classroom, and your peers are all around you, and they're the ones that are grading your paper. In a normal traditional college setting, you can talk to your peers in person, and they can tell you to your face what you did wrong or what they liked, or provide you with feedback. But online, it's basically anonymous. I mean, I don't know who these people are that are grading my papers. I don't know why they gave me a bad grade. And for me, I personally felt that because I didn't know these people, I didn't know their level of education, I didn't know what they did for their jobs, I gave them the benefit of the doubt. So these papers, while they might not be grammatically correct, if they hit on all the bullet points, then I said, you know what? I like what they're talking about. I understand their point of view, and I'll give them an A. I was very generous with my grading because I hoped that, you know, that other people would understand we all come from different backgrounds.
Now, as I understand it, you didn't actually end up completing the course. And that's not unusual, is it, when we look at MOOCs and the rate of completion?
Oh, absolutely. The completion rates are very, very low, normally under 10%. It's a little bit higher when people pay to complete the course. I didn't complete the course. I definitely tuned into some lectures further down the road because I still enjoyed learning. I liked all the lectures. My professor was fantastic, but I didn't do the assignments and I didn't do the essays just because I felt like for what I wanted to get out of it was just to learn more about this information, and I would have been unable to pass it because I had failed the essays.
So am I right in saying that the technology was not an issue for you? In fact, you were quite comfortable with the technology. What was missing from your experience was a fulfilling educational environment. Is that right?
Yeah. So the technology was great. Coursera is really fantastic. The lectures were really well done. It was more, what I was really missing was the experience of shared learning, because I felt like while there were discussion forums, it was all anonymous. The professor, he did offer Google Hangouts, however, it was for a very limited audience, and because we are, of course, all from different time zones, not all of us would be able to participate, and just because there were thousands of students in the class already, even less would have been able to participate. So I felt that while I felt as an individual that I was learning a lot from this professor, I felt like the experience that I was sharing with my other classmates, when I relate that back to college, I felt like we were kind of all in this together and we could all talk and chat and get to know each other. But the personal aspect when I took a MOOC was very much removed.
Harvard and MIT recognize the incredible effect that technology is having on education today.
It's opening new vistas in education for the world, for our campuses.
Online education for students around the world will be the next big thing in education. This is the single biggest change in education since the printing press.
Back for the final word to edX, one of the big MOOCs providers, and to Anand Agarwal, its CEO, who's also, I should mention, a professor of electrical engineering and computer science at MIT. Agarwal talks the big talk when it comes to MOOCs, but he's also very open about the teething problems. Selena Larson did her course through Coursera, not edX. Nevertheless, Agarwal concedes the basic point made by Larson that getting the social component of a MOOCs course right is essential to ensuring its ongoing success.
This is experimental in nature. You know, these platforms at the level that we're talking about have never been built before. So at edX, for example, even in the very first course that we offered, we had all of these components. We had simulation-based laboratories. We had video. We had a discussion forum. We had a wiki where students could collaborate. We had a grades dashboard where they could watch their grades. From the very first course, we had some social components. What we didn't know when we started out was the relative importance of these components. And as researchers have done studies and as we get feedback from students, we are finding that the social component is extremely important for engagement. And we are finding that gamification and virtual labs and so on are very important. And what might be less important is the actual production quality of the video. And so, you know, the engagement of the professor and the enthusiasm of the professor might be more important than just whether the video is super high quality HD or, you know, less higher quality. And so we are learning all of these things. And based on that, we are iterating on the platform and putting more focus on areas where we think we can get the most improvement, not just in student engagement, but also in the quality of learning.
Now, am I right in saying that while some people talk about MOOCs as a replacement for bricks and mortar universities, you talk about the future of MOOCs as being part of what you call blended learning? So you see a combination of the use of MOOCs and traditional bricks and mortar style education, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think improving campus was at the core of our mission right from day one. So even though for edX, even though we've been saying that all along, I think some of the very early rhetoric for MOOCs may have scared professors in other universities, where certainly some of the early MOOC purveyors made some very bold claims of how many universities there would be that would be left standing in the world and so on, which was frankly hurt everybody. And I think if we had been a lot more circumspect in how we had gone about this, I think a lot more people would have been on board.
Anant Agarwal. And just finally, to the other issue raised by Selena Larson, her disappointment with the practice of peer grading. Professor Agarwal accepts that MOOCs providers still have a significant challenge in effectively dealing with the huge numbers of students in need of assessment. EdX, he says, is developing a system that incorporates peer grading, self-grading, and computer grading using artificial intelligence. But once again, he fully accepts that it's not yet perfect.
For better or for worse, this is a work in progress. It is what it is. You know, we can't change what it is. We are into it for about 2 years, and we're experimenting with a number of technologies. And, you know, remember, I used Alta Vista, which was a precursor to search engines by Google and others. You know, I used that in the late 80s. And if that had scared me away at that time, and enough people got scared away that they did not continue developing it, today, 25 years later, we would not have had Google search. And search today is not the search that was there in the late 80s. And so with these grading systems we're talking about, it's barely been a few years. Yeah, some people might be scared, but the reality of the thing is it's a work in progress. And we've already made dramatic strides. We're already into our second version of peer grading with AI grading. Similar results. You know, our early results have been quite good. And so I think we keep improving this over time. By the same token, we have others who have found flaws in our grading system. You know, edX is open source. We are nonprofit. We've also made a platform available to anybody. And so anybody can take our software and evaluate it. And various people have done that. And they've shown that our software, which we made available to everybody, has flaws. And we says, great, let's improve upon it. And so we really believe that being open about our software and how we do things will enable people to cast sunshine into what we do. And as we all like to say, sunshine is the best disinfectant. And so we find out what's wrong and what can be done better, then we go do it.
And that was Anand Agarwal, the CEO of MOOCs provider edX. A transcript and podcast of this show are available from the Future Tense website. Thanks to co-producer Jennifer Leake and sound engineer Peter McMurray. I'm Anthony Fennell.
Brazil is the centre of the universe as world soccer dominates the airwaves. But Brazil is also the centre of a religious revolution. The most Catholic country in the world is facing its own competition from Pentecostals and evangelicals. They're running top businesses, they've a foothold in the politics, and they've fast become the religion of the slums, a church on every corner. Download or stream this religion and ethics report at the RN website.